This is Scott Becker with the Becker Women's Leadership Podcast. I'm thrilled to have with us today Yayla Schamburg. Yayla has built this magnificent technology, financial technology company called InvestCloud. She's a co-founder, the chief product officer. She hails from Alaska originally and then started the company in West Hollywood, and she'll tell us a lot more. Yayla, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Scott, thanks for having me on such an awesome podcast where you've interviewed and kind of told the stories of so many incredible women. So thank you on not only this topic, but including me. I'm happy to be here today.
Well, thank you. We're thrilled to have you here. Tell us a little bit about InvestCloud and give us 3 points of pride in it. Tell us a few things you're particularly proud of.
Oh, sure. Okay. So when we started InvestCloud in 2010, we had the idea really that any investment advisor could have a first-class integrated platform in the cloud with InvestCloud. And that was really our vision. And absolutely to just focus on a digital platform that was like institutional investment grade, that was accessible to a lot of people, regardless of size and what they're looking to accomplish, you know, currently with their business and then in the future with their business. So something that I'm particularly proud of is that we established that vision, as you rightly said, in a garage in 2010, you know, five of us, the Furious Five, when we were founding InvestCloud, and that vision has held true for us. And we talk about it daily and we execute it on a daily, and we really help that, leave that vision out there to help guide us at, when we're making decisions and moving the company forward. So I'm exceptionally proud that one, that our vision really was to say, how do we get our technology to be accessible to the most amount of people where it's necessary, where it can add value to their companies and ultimately to their clients' lives. So that's something I'm very proud of. I think I'm also really proud of the story of InvestCloud and how we started literally in a California garage with an idea, and how well we've been able to just adapt with the times. Because when we started in 2010, we actually picked the name InvestCloud, as you said. And, you know, we had peers in the industry who were saying, like, don't use the word cloud in your name. It's terrible. And, you know, no one's ever going to buy cloud in our industry. You know, financial services, everyone's too nervous. And we actually tried to buy the domain iCloud. Funnily enough, we were going to be like short for InvestCloud. We were going to be iCloud. And of course, that was not available because it was owned anonymously by by a very large company who we didn't know at the time. And we were making, you know, what we thought were very generous bids. You know, we'll give you $10,000 for the domain, to which they kept replying like no or ignoring us. You know, we'll give you $12,000 for the domain. And then, of course, I think it was about 2 years later, iCloud was launched. But so I'm glad that I'm proud of kind of the story of how we stuck with it, with our vision, and really rode the waves of the time as they came our way.
Fascinating. And talk for a moment. I'll let you come back to the next thing. Talk for a moment about InvestCloud and the world today. At one point, and I'm much older than you are, the whole world revolved around a handful of huge wealth management firms, you know, the Smith Barneys of the world, the Merrills of the world, all these Goldman Sachs. And really, these cloud-based applications have allowed smaller investment managers, smaller wealth advisors to play on a relatively equal footing. Isn't that true? Is that the sense of it?
I'm with you 100%. So sometimes you know, what we do, I find very valuable, and I love what we do, but I also don't want to make it sound too noble. You know, we're not out there, like so many frontline workers these days, risking things, but we are in a way democratizing certain technology and technological tools that can help people. And so I really view it, to your point, of now being able to create, you know, those boutique wealth managers to create a set of tools and a set of technology for them to use both in-house and also their clients to use. So suddenly that in a way opens up something as simple as financial planning. And financial planning doesn't have to be only for the wealthy anymore. There can be self-led tools where you can do some financial planning, what we call kind of digital advice planning, DAP. So that can be advisor-led. It's something you could co-create together. And so what you can do is kind of start to open up a set of tools that through the use of technology helps create a more even playing field, both for the managers, but also for people within the kind of the end user, or rather, you know, retail investor all the way through to a high net worth individual. It really brings to light a set of access and a set of educational content and tool base for people to start making better decisions for themselves. And we know financial decisions are some of the most stressful and some of the most important in people's lives.
And so help me understand, InvestCloud, who's the ultimate, who's the typical customer? Who uses the InvestCloud applications and tools? Who do you sell to?
Okay. So what we have now, when we started 10 years ago, we are now 10 years old and have over, of our clients that are that manage less than $50 billion, we have about $2 trillion on the platform with over an array of about 700 plus clients. So there's quite a few, but they fall into three buckets, right? So we're dealing with businesses directly and not the end consumer as it pertains to who our clients are. And that is a huge number of wealth advisors, private banks, family offices, as well as asset servicing companies, through to institutional investment asset managers. So those kind of three general buckets, wealth, asset management, and asset servicing are our three client bases. But it's not just them, their users in-house that are using the tools. As I said before, it actually extends to their client base. So when you think about wealth, our wealth clients, the advisors are using it. The customer service agents are using it. Their reporting teams are using it. Management is using it for reporting and metrics and business intelligence. And then all the way through to the end, their end client. So suddenly the matriarch of the family who actually has the wealth is using it. The husband or the patriarch as well is also using it. The children can be using the system to be able to see what's happening with the accounts, to be able to transact, to be able to create a financial plan, to be able to store documents to share with their families, with their advisors, and to be able to kind of actually have digital engagement with their supporting team on the wealth advisory side as well. So the users span the whole gamut.
Got it. And there's $2 trillion plus on the platform today, which really must be a huge point of pride. If you started this in a garage 10 years ago, and now $2 trillion mm-hmm. are flowing through one way or another, touching your platform, people use to manage their assets on it, 700 clients, that means on average, pretty significant wealth managers are using your tools. I mean, very, very impressive. Talk about, Yayla, how you iterate products. How do you develop products? How do you decide when to amend your core applications, when to change them, when to evolve something new? How do you go about that process as chief product officer?
Mm-hmm. That's a fun one. Thanks for that, Scott. So, because I love product, because I'm a bit of a dork that way. But it was the third point of pride, actually, when you asked me that question that came to mind, which is our innovation. We're big on innovating. So we have a roadmap, obviously, that's very client-led. When a client wants something specific, wants an enhancement or has an idea that they want to kind of co-create together. But we also run an entire program on ourselves and our own R&D dollars of innovation, and is where we think the industry is going. So when it comes to actually creating new product, we're very busy. So we're building and co-creating with clients and strategic clients all the time, very large, global banks all the way through to local, as you said, kind of boutique and focused wealth managers. So we're able to kind of use what is a very pliable platform to be able to create things to meet their specific needs on all levels at all times. But when we're actually innovating, we're looking at where we think the industry is going. And then we start to have kind of reach out to a certain customer base of ours and start to kind of like play with the ideas and see of those. We're fortunate enough to have a group of clients that are also innovators themselves or early adopters. And what they want to do is they want to be a part of some of those ideas, or at least kind of a beta tester or beta user of some of those ideas. So we're able to kind of come up with some ideas. We have a wonderful design team, so we're able to articulate those ideas in high fidelity, beautiful designs. And it's what we create, what we call kind of a design study. We create these design books that really speak to what is the functionality, how is it going to behave, how is it going to be expressed, right? And then we have this kind of really rich, we actually print them out, this really rich, thick book that shows all of that design. And we're able to take that to these strategic clients and or other opportunities in the market and say, like, this is what we're doing. Try this on for size. And clients are able to get really excited about that. And sometimes they give us some feedback and we're able to kind of adapt it. And then we're able to move it forward and actually build within our technology what we call working unwired solutions. So we're actually able to build production-ready code, that entire front-end experience that isn't necessarily wired to our client yet, because we know sometimes that's where some of the heavy lifting comes, but we can build the entire user experience and then put it in the hands of, our clients or users or testers or whatever, and really start to bring that product to life. And what that means is we can iterate quickly. It means we're extremely flexible, and it means that these things are happening on a month-by-month basis and not a year-by-year basis like traditional technology platforms, I think, have been relegated to in the past just due to the way they hard code things and the way things move. So we've developed a little bit of a different system so that we can innovate faster.
And that user experience, how it's seen by the wealth manager or by their clients, is so critical, isn't it? I mean, it's got to be great on the back end, but that user experience is so, so important because no one will touch anything anymore unless the user experience is great to work with.
Yeah, for a long time, I think it was almost, maybe it was the opacity of the industry where it was mysterious enough that you kind of used what you were given, but those days are gone, right? Us as consumers, you yourself, if you're sitting there with your iPhone or your Apple product or any other, you know, you're logging onto any system, we all have really high expectations of a user interface and the thought and the care that goes into designing and building user interfaces for technology these days. And those user interfaces should absolutely have digital empathy. There's no reason it should, especially as a woman, we talk about this a lot, like there's no reason I should log into a system that I'm expected to develop a really strong connection with and use regularly and feel that it doesn't even speak to me as a user or as a person who has kind of my own priorities or my own lens in the world. So digital empathy is really important. And you can really only get that, as you rightly say, through focusing on an empathetic and a thoughtful user interface. And then having the flexibility to be able to change that based on either different user groups or different individuals who want things a little bit, you know, served up a little bit differently. So those days of being able to have kind of one size fits all or just kind of take the technology you're given are totally over, especially in a space that is so highly charged like money and wealth.
Yes, and people get and see the most interesting, the most newest, the best stuff. Another question for you. You've had this great entrepreneurial career, founder of a magnificent company, InvestCloud. What advice would you give to other emerging leaders or other emerging entrepreneurs? What are 2 to 3 pieces of advice that you would give to another emerging entrepreneur or leader?
Ooh, okay. Well, when giving advice to new, not just a founder, but kind of new people or sometimes when I'm talking to people joining our organization, we often say, and there's 2 things to advice that I like to give. One is take ownership of something. The more ownership you have, I'm not saying oversaturate yourself, but don't make the problem someone else's fault. Don't make the problem your client did this or so-and-so didn't do this. Take responsibility and take action for the problem because then you can fix it. You can take responsibility and you can move things forward. And with that, you'll have great speed and agility. So always kind of not relying, not to say don't work as a team, but take ownership of issues, of problems, of decisions where you can and where appropriate and move forward with velocity. So I think that's one thing because sometimes you see in what I've noticed in my time kind of in working with some large organizations is sometimes the ball of kind of the ownership or the decision or the ultimate responsibility gets passed around and you lose a lot of time and focus in doing that. So that's one piece of advice that I would have for someone. And I think the other one is, we joke sometimes, I use the analogy of skiing. I'll just specify since I'm in Southern California, snow skiing. So skiing on snow and not water skiing. But when you're skiing down, let's say you're about to hit a pitch, you're going down a hill. And what do they always tell you? You know, like, lean forward, lean into your boots, shins against your boots. You should be touching your shin on your boots and you should be leaning into it, which seems counterintuitive because we know if you're leaning back, you'll likely won't last long. And so I think the same thing, both for an entrepreneur, both for kind of starting any new venture or, you know, whether in-house, whether an entrepreneur, whether an entrepreneur or whether you're starting just a new role, really kind of lean into it. And that means get comfortable being uncomfortable. Get comfortable when new things come your way, just when you were getting comfortable because you had already mastered what you were doing and moving into something new. So go with it and really lean into those boots. And it's going to be absolutely terrifying at times, but, you know, massively exciting and rewarding.
So we love those pieces of advice. And now, next question I have is, you've lived in some of the great places to live. You went to Boulder for college and did a master's there. You now live in Southern California. You were raised in Alaska. Did you ever tell your parents, how did you end up in Alaska when you could be in Boulder or Southern California, or is Alaska magnificent as well?
Yeah, oh, man, no, Alaska is magnificent, but it's interesting because I remember as a child when I learned how my father why my father moved to Alaska. Both my parents are actually Southern. My mother's from Florida. My father's from Louisiana, New Orleans. And my father joined up what I think was AmeriCorps, or I think the name's changed now to Vista or something, but it was a program out of law school. Actually, he was doing law school in Texas, and he was given the opportunity to be an attorney for one of the emerging American economies. And at the time, it was Alaska, Hawaii, or Puerto Rico were kind of the three, right? Because this is back in the 60s that were newer economies. And he chose Alaska. And as soon as I heard that, I remember just being a child and looking at him with complete disbelief, being like, I could have grown up in Hawaii? To which he reminded me, which case, absolutely not, because he would have never met my mother, who moved up there as a young woman. So Alaska is a great place. It was a great community to grow up in. My parents were fantastic pillars of our local community, which I always thought everyone had this extensive community. They were small business owners. He also had his own law practice. And I saw people kind of go to my parents for advice about their gardens, and advice to my father about kind of family matters, because he's a family attorney, advice on starting and managing a business. So I loved how that was kind of this reciprocal ecosystem. And so what I got out of Alaska was not only the natural beauty of it, but a really strong sense of community, since a lot of people have moved there or live there. And it's not a long established economy and heritage of families. You don't have a lot of families that have generations going back there. It is very much the Wild West in the new terrain. So you have a lot of people that have moved there. So therefore, they really have created beautiful communities and friendships and whatnot amongst themselves. And I did get the pleasure of reaping the rewards and enjoying that. But also in the interim, then my parents are fantastic at travel. And so they were like, it's time to go, you know, get out of the nest kind of thing. And so there was a pit stop in Israel for a couple of years before Boulder. And then after Boulder, there was some time in where I did some work for about 5 years in London in the United Kingdom. And I think there was a New York stint in there as well. So I've been moving down the alphabet.
What a magnificent journey. I mean, you've really gone around and around. I thought it was a straight track from Alaska to Colorado to Southern California, but a much more extensive array than that. One more question for Yayla today, and thank you. What are your top two or three priorities as you look at the next 6 to 12 months? Well, how do you look at priorities, and what do you look at as the top ones in the next 6 to 12 months?
Oh, okay. Priorities. So one I think is, are we talking personally or professionally?
Both is fantastic. Either is great, and our audience will love to learn about both.
Okay. Well, one personally is I would really like to get back on the ski slopes this year. I don't know how it's going to look for the world, but I do miss that. And to be a little better at gardening, I think we've all taken up certain hobbies, domestic hobbies, and in this time where we've been more domesticated for some of us. So I have a vegetable garden I've been working on, so probably to be a little bit better there. So those are some personal micro joys that I would really enjoy. But as I look forward personally, in all seriousness, I'm looking at kind of what the next step for me, both personally and professionally, because those all blend together for InvestCloud. What does it look like as we scale, as we grow? We are now, as you said, a company with over 700 clients, with more than, it's actually just of our smaller clients, it's 2 trillion of assets on the platform. So as we look to scale this business, and we are global, but as we continue to expand globally, what does that look like? Not only for our products, but for me as chief product officer, what is it that I need to bring in terms of scale and to maintain our innovation and our agility in creating new products and bringing those to market, and then changing ones we have, the existing ones we have. We're not interested in having products that are kind of these cash cows to let them out to pasture and just kind of like fade into the distance. It's how do we keep all of our things moving and dynamic within this organization as we continue to grow and do larger work with large organizations and still service large volume of small and mid-tier organizations as well. So personally, that's kind of what I think about individually. I wouldn't say it keeps me up at night, but it keeps me kind of wondering and keeps me hungry, is how are we going to do that? And then what kind of co-founder and chief product officer do I need to be to actually make that happen and to help move that vision forward?
So that's magnificent. I mean, really looking at how do you improve both the current products so they get better and better and better, because you know you can rest on those cash cows for a while, but then at some point they go and decline if you're not constantly improving them or innovating on them and then developing new products.
Someone's going to come eat your lunch.
It just is what it is, and then constantly growing the what you serve to your 700 clients and growing the client base and make sure you're innovating and growing to do that well and effectively where every product you have is great, is fantastic. And then I love the getting back in the ski slopes. You know, I'm a very average skier, but I respect getting on the ski slopes, but I will avoid the hard slopes of someone that spent time in Boulder and Colorado seriously. You can do those. And then the gardening, we wish you great luck with as well. Never easy, but fantastic. I don't have the patience for it, but magnificent for people that do. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I have my sights set high. Obviously, skiing and gardening. If I can get those tomatoes to make a comeback, then I'll be quite proud.
And if you can combine those two endeavors, so skiing and gardening together, you would be incredible, but just magnificent. In any event, just magnificent what you and InvestCloud have done. I thank you so much for joining us today on the Becker Women's Leadership Podcast. Just remarkable what you've all accomplished. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott.